What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did-we-just-hit-a-million-orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
Ohio, ready for some quick mental health facts? Let's go. Nearly 2 million Ohioans live with a mental health condition. In the U.S., more than 50% of people will be diagnosed with a mental illness in their lifetime. Depression is a leading cause of disability worldwide. So why are some of us still stigmatizing people living with a mental health condition when we know all of this? Let's listen to the facts and beat the stigma. Ohio, challenge what you know about mental health at beatthestigma.org.
This is King Carus, the Black History Buff, and welcome to a new segment called Our Stories Told Our Way. Often, I get contacted via Instagram or Facebook or Twitter by someone who's come across one of my posts and is either related to the person who I've written about or has some special insight that they want to share. Well, this segment is to give those people, maybe even yourself, the chance to share some of these amazing stories directly. Recently, I got talking to an amazing woman named Rory Flack, and it turned out that Rory was the first African-American woman to do a backflip on ice. It also turns out that Rory had a lot of other firsts as well. So rather than tell Rory's story for her, we spoke, I recorded it, and I let Rory tell her story her way. The interview actually begins with me dropping my microphone and fumbling my way back into the interview. The first question I'm asking her is, what made you, at age 5, decide you want to get into ice skating? Now, I do get there eventually when I ask the question, so just bear with the fumbling and the audio gets better as it goes along, and I promise I don't drop it again. So please, kick back, relax, enjoy the show, and forgive my little fumble at the beginning. Cheers.
Are you able to kind of tell me, like, how you got into ice skating? Like, what it was like at the beginning, and what led you to that moment? Because it must have been quite a thing. You know, like at 5, the only thing I knew I wanted to be was a dinosaur, or the Incredible Hulk. The last thing I wanted to be was anything athletic. I just wanted to play games and be Marvel characters. And at 5, you were already skating. I mean, is that something you always knew that you wanted to do?
Well, yeah. From the first time I saw it on TV, and I was. It was like Saturday morning and flipping channels for my dad. And all of a sudden there was a girl that skated across a big field, and it was ice. You know, it was the first time I'd ever seen anything like that. And it was amazing to me because when they said her name, how everybody screamed and applauded. And that just seemed like that was just instant acceptance, I guess you could say. And all she did was stand there. And then when she glided across the ice, it was like, oh, what is she doing? And, you know, so it was Worlds, I believe. It was Dorothy Hamill. And shortly after that, they opened the mall opened a rink by my house. And my friend had a birthday party, and invited me to the party. I got on the ice and never wanted to get off. It was just, it was a freedom. It was a feeling of freedom to be able to go so fast and literally not have to move. And that sounds weird because, you know, you skate, all of a sudden you're skating, but then you're just gliding. And the wind is going through you and it's cold. I lived in Phoenix, Arizona, so it was a hot, you know, hot climate. And it was just freeing to be able to just glide there. And, you know, so from that moment on, I really felt I want to do this forever.
And did you, were you able to kind of like vocalize that when you hit the ice and you felt that freedom? Did 5-year-old Rory go back home to mom and dad and was like, "Mom, I'm going to do this every Saturday now," or did that kind of come a bit later?
No, it was instantly when I got home. You know, you get home from a birthday party and you tell them everything about the party. Well, all I had to tell about was the ice cream and the ice skating. We had ice cream and then we went ice skating and I want to go back. When can I go back?
Okay.
That was the constant, was when can I go back? And I remember my dad saying, "Oh, we'll let you go back one day." So, you know, I thought, well, this is me. I wonder if, you know, when that day is. And I don't even remember when I got to go back, but I just remember, it wasn't too long. My mother took me to a public skate and there was a woman there. Her name was Jerry, right? And she was a coach at the rink and she pulled my mom aside and she's like, she told my mom how much talent I had and she could get me lessons and get me into skating. And so it was, I think for my mom, what was interesting and intriguing about it was I was the only Black person on the ice. The whole time, through a whole public skate for 2 hours, people coming in and coming out, I was the only Black person on the ice. So, when I got on the ice, I just skated to the middle and followed what the other skaters were doing, you know, just trying everything. And Jerry told my mother that she had a used pair of Harlech boots with a Carnation Ace on them that she would sell to my mom for $10 if she put me in lessons.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. They were probably two sizes too big.
Wow. And did your mother noticed that, but to you, did you feel like, yeah, I'm the only person like me here, or was it just you and the ice at that age?
Oh no, there was, everybody was out there. You know what I mean? There was just tons of people and I just wanted to find the one that looked the best and get better than them.
Okay. And how long did it take for you to find the best and get better than them?
I started lessons in June, right after school was out. And by December, I was starting in my first ice show.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. I went through my class. We did ISI. So I did Alpha, Beta, Gamma, Delta. I went through 4 classes by Christmas. And yeah, so they didn't even have me do the group number with the Learn to Skate kid. They just said, "Well, Rory's in between so many levels, we're just going to put her by herself."
Wow.
So I thought, okay. That's what I have to do. And shortly after, I remember, there's times in your life that you key into certain things, you know? And I remember at 10, my mother said to me, because, you know, I was just good. And she says, "Well, now if you want to win a competition, you have to be 10 times better than everybody else." So it was, then there was a bar. And I couldn't figure out why 10 times better. she told me, you know, I think I understood why at 14 when I met Mabel Fairbanks, and I felt that I knew I was better because I was doing more than everybody else, but I couldn't win. And that was the thing. It was like, I got to a point where I was like, Mom, they're just never gonna let me win. Doesn't matter how much better I am.
So, for people listening and for myself even, what do you mean by they wouldn't let you win? Like, I know that there's a scoring system, and the scoring is quite subjective, isn't it? But why did you feel you weren't going to win? You've hit that bar that you're now competing, you're ready to go, and you've got the talent, but you're not winning. Why was that?
Well, back then, my mother, you know, it's being ingrained in you. And remember, this is the early 70s. Mm-hmm. So what's being ingrained in me is that we have to be so much better for them to even see us on the ice and take us seriously. That the one thing you can never do, and she always says, never give them a reason, because they already have one in America. So you think about it, at that time in the States, I didn't know of any other black skater. At 13, Debbie Thomas was 18, I believe. She was 18. And I had not seen or heard of her. So it was easy to tell me why. It's not a sport. It's an expensive sport. We'll start there. And that's why there's not a lot of blacks in there. Then you get down to the nitty gritty. At 14, when I met Mabel Fairbanks, and I said that, and she looked at me and she says, you know, Rory, if you quit, because I wanted to quit, I was just done. And part of it was we had school figures back then. And the school figures you did first, and then you did your freestyle. And how they added it up was figures were worth 33% of your score, and freestyle was worth the rest. So you do your figures first, and wherever you place, they flip the order, and that's how you skate your freestyle. Mm-hmm. It started out that every time I got on the ice to do figures, I would be in last place. Dead last. And it got to, people started thinking, well, she's just not good at figures. She's just not good at figures. You know, that was my downfall. So I'd always end up skating first or second to do my freestyle program. Yeah. And I would win the freestyle. But being in last and winning the freestyle puts you in fourth place overall. Every time.
Yeah.
Every single time. And first place is the first loser, if you ask me. That's how I felt, because you're the runner-up. You get nothing. 1, 2, 3 get something. Even second place, you know what I mean? It's like you didn't have to win, but I wanted to medal. I want to be seen. I want to be recognized. I was the best out there, and I don't even get to stand on the podium.
Yeah.
And so at that point, I ran into Mabel, or Mabel was standing with my mother at a rink, and she says to me, "Do you know who that is?" And remember, again, 70s, early 70s, or late 70s, early 80s, when you walk into a building and there's not very many black people, and I don't know if it's like this over there, but you acknowledge each other. You get the nod.
Yeah, you've got the nod. Okay. That's the universal black fist. It's a black fist about a black fist. You just,
Yep. And it's always like for us then, I'd ask my mom, why do you do that? And she's like, because you know what? We made it.
Yeah.
We all came from Africa, and we made it to the same little rink in wherever we were. And this is a prestigious place where they never expected us. And you made it. So yeah, you nod and you smile, and that's your achievement and your pride. And only we know this. Yeah. So when she was explaining to me who this woman was, and it was Mabel Fairbanks, and who broke down all the barriers for us here. Not allowed in the rink when she was younger. You know, they had to sneak her in at night. Just the story behind Mabel Fairbanks. And then she's standing there looking at me. I might cry. And I'm feeling put out by a woman who wasn't even let in. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I understand.
And she looks at me and she says, you know what, Rory? If you quit, they win. It's all they want. They were not supposed to be here. And so they're not making it hard for us, but they're sure is not going to make it easy. And what you're feeling, your struggle right now, you get to compete. Blacks weren't allowed to compete in the U.S. until the early 60s. So Mabel Fairbanks, you know, in 1920, going into an ice rink, it took that long for the USFSA to approve Blacks to be in any type of skating club. So when I have the pioneer, the person who made it possible for me to even step on the ice, telling me not to quit, okay. Okay.
And so what kind of happened at that point? Like, that was the...
At that point, that was a changing point for me. And I got stronger, even though, you know, I felt I was as strong as I could be. I got stronger and I was even more determined to be somebody in this sport. Just more determined to make a name for us in this sport. And for me, it was always, and people don't even realize this, it was always a Black thing.
Mm.
You know, it always was, because what else did I know? You know, I ran track. I did gymnastics at 10 years old when I had to make a choice. And you have to be 10 times better. So you're already the best at track. You completely accepted. I win everything. I'm fast. You know, I could do the 440 and the hurdles. And, you know, that's an easy for me at that time, and my body type, that's an easy dream. Gymnastics, I was good too. And I was still yet the only Black in gymnastics at that time also. Mm. So it's like, okay, so what do you want to do? Make a choice, because you can't, you know, spread your life so thin that you can be a jack of all trades, but master of none.
Yeah.
You know? So, so I just, you know, I chose skating, and Mabel, she set me right, you know, cause I'm sure my mother could have told me that 1,000 times over. And I probably would have looked at her and said, what do you know? You're not a skater. You don't know the feeling out there and how it feels when you're the best and you're standing in your skates afterwards with your dress on and you're watching everybody you beat stand up there and get a medal put around their head. It's a feeling of, what more can I do? So from there, I went up a level. I went home. I became a junior lady. And I just trained. I finally made it to nationals. It literally took me 3 years. It was my third year junior to make it to nationals, to make it out of fourth place. And wow. The year I made it out of fourth place, I was, you'll laugh at this, there was figures, there was a short program and a long program. So the ratio, the percentage changed. And to get to nationals, I was at sectionals and I got last in figures, first in short, first in freestyle, and third overall. And it was like, for me, finally, I made it out. I finally made it to nationals. And so when you say, why did about keeping me out, never letting me win?
Yeah.
When I got to nationals, I got third in figures out of 22 people. And I was the first to skate the first figure. And I remember I looked at my mom the whole time. I watched the leaderboard. I'm like, I'm still in first. I'm still in first. I'm still in first. I'm still in first. Okay. And I looked at my mom and I looked at her straight in the face and said, I told you I had good figures. Like, it was getting out of our coast, our section. I met Debbie Thomas too. And she was a senior lady. And her mother then told me that, or told my mother that they changed regions in order for her to make it out. They had to move.
Mm.
And the first time she made it to nationals, she was a senior lady. That's too long for a champion. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah.
And when you make it the first time, you win. Hello. Something's not right there. And the year she won was the first year our nationals ever had three black athletes in it. In figure skating.
Yeah, that's amazing.
You know, and that was 1986. It's unheard of.
And so the three of you there, you know, you're mm-hmm. you're the first three to make it. Mm-hmm. What was the camaraderie like between the three of you? Did it feel like, you know, did it feel like a first? Did it feel like a moment? Did it feel like, ladies, we're making history here?
You know, no, not so much. It, you know what it felt like? I guess this is the odd thing is that it was myself, Bobby Beauchamp, and Debbie Thomas, and we were in the same area of training. Actually, Bobby trained with me at the same rink. So when it was time for nationals, for us not understanding really the huge importance, I remember that my coach, John Nix, called myself and Bobby into the office and before nationals, and he said, okay, we need to prep for this. And I'm looking at him like, what do you mean prep for this? We finally get to go to nationals. And he said, we need to prep for interviews because this is the first time there's ever been three black skaters at nationals, and it's going to be crazy with interviews. He really believe that. So he started to hype us up, our character, you know, making yeah. sure that you don't say anything in the elevators, in the hallway, in, you know, like any feelings that you have, you keep them to your hotel room because people, you're going to be under a microscope. And, you know, that's something that you don't feel it when I personally didn't feel it so much when I stepped on the ice. Everything went away. The only thing that was nerve-wracking is it was my first time at nationals and I'd never skated in an arena or a rink that big before. Mm-hmm. So it was a little scary. But all the other parts of it, it didn't really factor into the feeling that I had finally made it. The only thing that factored into it was me thanking Mabel for keeping me strong.
Yeah.
You know, getting us here and keeping me strong because now is my time. And at that nationals, I was second in figures, sixth in short program, sixth in long program, and third overall. Because my figures were so high in second place, it didn't make a difference that I didn't win the freestyles. I didn't win what everybody was waiting to see this little girl do. I didn't do it like I wanted to.
Yeah.
And I still got to stand up and they put the medal around. You know, it was like, it was a feeling of love and peace and knowing that I'm all right, right there.
Not fourth place anymore.
Right. And you know what? It was my figures that held me up that time.
The thing they said you couldn't do. Okay.
Exactly. So then I thought, then I, you know, that was the redemption of, I told you they were holding me back. How can you explain to somebody or to everybody that what you're doing out there that only you and those judges walking across the ice can see that they're wrong.
Mm.
Do you know how do you, and then you sit back and every competition you do, you just, I just got better and better and better. Okay, my figures are just going to get better then. Because I know they're good. I passed the test.
And to,
you know, so,
you know, in sports and in sporting excellence, it is about those small gains. What did you do to get those small gains? Did you change a routine or was it just a sheer determination to get out of that fourth place? Was it just push?
It was just a push. And oddly enough, you know, I had pushed and was so determined already being first all the time in freestyle. I only had one area to focus harder on, you know, and that was the figures. And then again, and then training at a national level is different. So you have to train at a national level to get to a national level.
Yeah.
You know, people think you can train and I'll get beat. Then I'll be national level and then I can train like that. All those people who are going to nationals are already training like that.
Mm.
So, you know, you get a coach. I got that year a sports trainer off ice, started working out at the gym, you know, just and more off ice lessons, stretching, just, yeah, becoming a national champion in my head. First, got to come from within,
mm-hmm.
you know, so it came from within and then I can, then all I have to do is show them. And to me, it's like, I tell my son who skates now, you must remember that you never go out there to prove yourself. It's not about proving what you can do. You practice every day to prove to yourself that you can do it in front of people. So when you go out there to skate, it's a show. You're just showing them everything you practice every day with a smile on your face. Because you can only be beaten by yourself at the end of the day. So it was, yeah, you know, it's just a different training thought process.
That's fantastic. I'm that's going to stay with me forever, actually. In your head first. You're a champion in your head first. And then it comes out.
Don't let anybody
out.
Take it out. Yep. Yep.
Okay. So
you don't have to prove it to anybody if it's in your own head.
That's right. That's right.
You don't have to tell anybody. It's just you doing you. And then nobody's going to try and put you down or nobody says anything because you're just doing you. And you know what? I'm a champion. You don't see it yet. But the world will know and I will show it to you.
That's amazing. Okay, so what? So you're a champion in your head. You're out of fourth place. What came next?
Mm-hmm. Oh, what came next was when they took figures out of the sport,
mm-hmm.
and then that just then it was great. I want to say it was great because you started in whatever place you pulled out of the basket. You know, it wasn't whatever you got from figures is backwards. Now I have a fair shot, even though I had already proven to the world or shown to the world I have good, or the country, that I have good figures. When they took the figures out, it was for me uplifting because I could focus in more on my artistic side of skating.
Okay.
There was so much to do before.
Okay. And in between then, I believe you made an appearance on Saturday Night Live.
Yeah, that was my second nationals. So at that point, after the first nationals and the three of us were there, there was a hype for the next year. Because for the next year, there were two African-American senior ladies, first time ever. I don't think there's ever been since then.
Mm-hmm.
So it was myself and Debbie Thomas. So I had a hero to look up to that literally was standing next to me in practice. Her coach would be, or her patch would be, the first year we were doing figures. And so her patch was right next to mine. And after we did the figures that year, they had the big bins in the lobby. And we all walked through and threw our skates away. It was like last figure ever. So it was, you know, what happened then was there was a lot of confusion. It was 1988, Saturday Night Live, I believe it was in February. They took a picture of my split jump. It was the first time my split jump, I guess, was made famous. Is I was during the evening news, you know, during Saturday Night Live, and can't think of his name right now. Anyway, I was at a sleepover and I woke up and I saw myself on TV. And the joke was that my splits were so split that they couldn't believe I only got 10th place. Like, okay, because nobody'd ever seen a split jump like that. It was just, you know, it was, for whatever reason, it was really cool because it was me. Debbie Thomas won.
Yeah.
Debbie Thomas was going to the Olympics, and I was on Saturday Night Live for my split jump, and because I had a great program, and I moved up being the last year in figures. Of course, I would think I was 21st in figures. Mm-hmm. and I moved up, biggest jump ever, 12 places. And because I skated so well, they really thought I was going to win.
Yeah.
They didn't know the politics behind skating. So NBC put up their favorite skater, and it was me. And it was pretty cool. So that drove me for more. You know, it got me more excited about the possibilities of what I could do as a figure skater.
Yeah.
So then we're coming into the late 80s, early 90s, where the rappers and are starting to do movies.
Yeah.
And entertainment, black entertainment is all of a sudden entertainment. And you see more of us on TV, and there's the Fresh Prince show, and, you know, just things are happening. And then I was on TV, and I was like, okay, that's my next goal. I want to be on TV. So, the new show In Living Color was coming out. Do you know that show?
I do know Living Color.
Okay. Well, the same year, 1992, it came out. I was auditioning to be a fly girl. And it was actually 91 because I had overtrained so much, I threw my back out and had to quit life. That's what I was telling you. I threw my back out. Yeah. I woke up, could not walk. And that was so devastating. I mean, I made it to the sectionals that year through buys. I got medical buys through competitions because I had been a national level skater. So I got a medical buy to sectionals, and then I was able to train to get there, and I just couldn't. I mean, I skated, and I really believed at that point that was the last time I was ever going to skate.
Wow.
Because it was just, I was in so much pain that I made myself worse, you know, by pushing through. But, you know, you had my section of the country was Christy Yamaguchi. This was our sectionals. Was Christy Yamaguchi, Tonya Harding. I can't even remember the other, there was just every one of us was somebody in the sport already. So, you know, I had to be flawless, and there was no way I could be flawless. So I chalked it up to, you know, just have fun. This is your last competition. You know, it's time to grow up.
Yep.
And start a life. You know, they told me that when I got back from that competition, I probably wouldn't walk properly again. So, you know, it was like, it really was, I really thought it was the end of all. So I quit skating, got a job. I was a manager at, it's a department store for Shiseido makeup. And I did, you know, it's like, okay, well, this is me. I guess, you know, I made my mark. And I had a friend from the East Coast show up, and she told me, She says, well, you told me the day you quit skating, you would go skiing. Because something everybody wants to do, but I was so afraid I'd hurt myself and I'd never skate again. Yeah. So she showed up out of the blue. We went skiing and she got me to join an ice show. She says, you really want to do this for the rest of your life? She's like, you're walking fine. You even went skiing, Rory. You can do an ice show. So I joined an ice show. I joined a little show called Broadway on Ice.
Yep.
When I got to the show, they one of the people there said, you know, you should do this competition, the U.S. Open. And, you know, I just, at the time I was doing the ice show, I bartended at night. I taught skating during the day on my days off, and I did 5 shows a day in a theme park. And I had a group of friends in, well, one of my best friends was in the show with me, and he says to me, and it was 1991, he says to me, you know, you say you want to be somebody in the sport, you have to do something that nobody else does. And I was like, yeah, like my split jumps. And he says, no, like a backflip. And I went, are you kidding me? Girls don't do those. He says, exactly. That's why you need to be the first. And I was like, well, okay. I could do a backflip. I was a gymnast. But on the ice.
So for people who don't know the sport, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, the thought of doing I'm going to be brutally honest here. My first experience of ice skating, I'll never forget it. I think I must have been 8, maybe 9 years of age. It could even have been 11. And I remember being terrified because I went out and I'd been given the horror story that I think everybody who's ever done ice skating has been given of, there was this one kid who fell and his fingers got sliced off. Right?
So right.
I'm sure that's the story that I got, right? Now, so for me, the idea of doing a backflip on ice, I don't know what I'd lose. How? it was unheard of, right? You don't do backflips on ice.
But you know, one thing I used to do as a kid, probably started this at 16, because I love gymnastics, is I used to, on our break, do backflips in the parking lot at the rink. Mm. And so it's like I thought to myself, okay, that's a big wide space. I'm not afraid to do it outside, land in the gravel or on the beach or... You know, and my friend Doug, he could do a backflip. So it was like, okay, will you teach me? And the training of a backflip for on the ice, you do everything off ice. It's a pressure move. And
yeah.
And the fact of making sure that you're going to be high enough is really one of the biggest fears. The biggest fear is I'm so used to, for, you know, 15, 16 years, when I tap, I rotate like a jump. I don't go upside down. My feet, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it's the same takeoff as a regular jump that you do. However, you have to go, you know, but it's a flip. When I did a backflip on the ice or off the ice, I only did a walkout like Saria does.
Yeah.
That's the only way I could do it. So I had all these fears in my head. Like, how am I going to land? Am I going to land on one foot? What's going to happen when I'm upside down? So I did a lot of backflips off tables, off walls, you know, to get the stretch out when you land.
Where do you find a table to backflip from? Like, I just have this image of in my head now of you just walking along and you see a table, just flip. You see a chair, flip like a skateboarder today, just flipping off.
Yeah, I was, you know what? I was like that. I was like that as a kid. And then even then, I mean, I was 20, probably 21 years old, and I was still like that because I just so needed to be more. Do you know? Then there was just, I just knew there was more to me. And, you know, there was two people said something in my life that stuck forever, what Mabel said. And the day I stepped off that ice at sectionals, when I decided that was it,
yeah,
I stepped off the ice and my mom was standing there, and my mother did not come to competitions with me. I moved out at 14. So here we are all these years later, because when my back went out, I went to my mom's. So she's with me and I get off the ice and I'm crying. I'm not crying because of how I skated. I'm crying because in my heart and in my mind, I was never going to see anybody again. The only time you see people, like if you go to a track meet, you see all the people from all your friends from different schools, or you know what I mean? So I thought, this is it. My mother held me and she looked me in my eye and she says to me, she goes, "Rory, your spotlight is in a bigger arena." And it made sense. Mabel told me not to quit. It wasn't just about winning nationals. It was about making an impact. And where you were going, somebody's already been there. Debbie had been there. Did she make that impact we wanted? No, because they took away from it. They took away from what she did, as what you kind of what we were talking about earlier. And instead of seeing who she is, let's talk about why she's not what we thought she could be.
Yeah.
Instead of all the positive things that she's doing or she did for us in the sport, and I say positive, she did that for me too. I got to be there when the first African American won nationals. I was right there. And that meant something. So when I saw that, it's like, okay, let's, you know, you're rooting. So it wasn't for me to be the first African American to win the Olympics. Yes, that's going to make an impact. And I keep saying it's going to.
Yeah.
And it doesn't have to be an African American. It's going to be a Black. It's going to make a difference.
Yeah.
One day. But where I could make a difference, and I found out, was my spotlight was in a bigger arena. It was in the professional world. And it was in a place where it was only a spotlight. There were no house lights. It was just a whole different, I just have to keep saying arena. You know, it's like going from playing in a jazz club to being at the Super Bowl.
Yeah. Different stage.
Because that manager, all together, different audience, just, you know, an audience where cat back flip, my split jumps, me not being a household name yet. Nobody knowing me. You listen to, and I keep getting videos, and now I listen to those. I like to watch myself skate now. And more than anything, I listen. People don't listen. They're watching the commentators. Like in people, when you're watching an amateur event and they're commentating, they're critiquing, they're, you know, back and forth. Well, this might cost her the championship. And, you know, she did this better. And then we have the next skater. When you listen to the professional championships that I did, because they then in the 90s created a whole circuit. And I want to say it was for me. And I want to say that because I was the only person in that circuit that wasn't an Olympian.
Yeah.
You know, I was there because the networks wanted me there. So competitions would be held and they'd say, "We want Rory," because I was different.
So tell us about the flip. the first time. So we've had the friend has taught you, you're backflipping off tables now. You're wondering what's going to mm-hmm. happen in the air. It's a pressure move. You're out on the ice. It's the what that day? What happened?
We did it.
Yes.
Yeah, so I skated around that rink for 2 months. 2 months with my friend gearing up for this backflip. And I would, you know, skate, and he was right there. Here's the funny story is he was smaller than me, and he's like, should I put you on a harness? And I'm like, you know what? When I finally do this, I'll probably throw you off your feet. I'll get it. I'll do it. And, you know, skating around, preparing. I have kind of a unique preparation because I had to get my mind wrapped around not just gliding backwards and doing a flip. And when I finally did it, it was the easiest thing on the planet. I did it and I landed on my feet, and then I kind of squatted down, you know? So I was gliding backwards in a squat position, laughing. Because I couldn't believe it took me so long to do something that felt so easy once I did it.
It's a graceful thing.
Oh, that was it? Thank you.
To everybody listening to this, I'm going to put a link in the description because people need to see this. This is a big moment. And watch the link. But so once that's done, and you've done something nobody else, you've literally done something nobody else has ever done. And I think that's for me is to be like, that's always got to be recognized and applauded in people when you're the first to do something ever. You know, you were the first. And today, especially on social media, you see a lot of the first person to. I saw something that was really funny the other day. It was like, you know, the first African American to be on Cosmopolitan magazine with natural hair. And I was like, really? It was something like that. I was like, really? Are we really digging that deep now? On the one hand, I was upset. On the other hand, I was like, it's good that we're digging that deep now. Like, there's a lot of barriers mm-hmm. broken now. But, like, well, impact-wise, kind of what happened after you did that? Because
impact-wise, it was amazing. And I love that people geared up for my backflip, mm-hmm. you know? So I started putting it at the end of the program. So that for me, it was it became a strength move then, because can you do this at the end of a program?
Yeah.
You know, as well as you could do another jump. Can it be flawless like that? But here in America, it wasn't until, I want to say Simone, but it was Simone. It wasn't Gabby. Simone, I don't remember her last name, but she was the first African American to win an all around in gymnastics. And that was only then, not too long ago, did America start wanting to pump us up for being the first black to do something. When I did it, and you'll hear the commentating, they didn't want to acknowledge it like that. And as much as I wanted to, it was almost like in the 90s, that's not important. We don't want to make that a thing.
Yeah.
So the commentating becomes, you won't see anybody else in this competition do it. That's what the commentating became. And then in 1998, after Saria did it, 7 years later, then it was, you only see two.
You only see two.
There's only two ladies that do this. And then it went into, when we were here in America, when she turned pro, there were literal times, literally people would say, okay, which one of you is going to do the backflip? And I'm sitting here thinking, why are you asking since I'm the first to do it? But more than anything, why does it make a difference?
Yeah, of course.
Why can't we both do it? And I would look right. I remember looking at a producer and saying, you have two blondes doing double toes. You got two brunettes doing camel spins. Why can't you have two black women doing backflips? Hmm. Well, because backflips overshine everything.
We can't. Yeah.
Because everybody does double toes and everybody does camel spins. But you only got two people
who could do backflips.
Here, who could do backflips. And you just happen to be black. And they would actually say, it would, you would hear the Freudian slip. Okay, wait, you guys both can't do the black flip. Excuse me?
I was going to say that. Oh, they must have called it black flips so many times.
Mm-hmm. Europe was the only place we got to do them side. And we would do them side by side. We have fun. We were friends.
Yeah.
You know, people trying to pitch you. That's what we became, Saria and I. And Saria is 5 years younger than me. So she's a whole different era.
Mm.
In skating, it's 4 years because you got your Olympic gap. So if, you know, my Olympic dream was 92, she was 96. She was, you know, Debbie was 88. So to come on to a platform, and then all of a sudden it's like, because there's two of us, we must hate each other. There's got to be problems. Wait, she's darker than you, so she probably doesn't like you as much. It's like, oh my gosh, you guys were best friends.
Yeah.
It's in Europe, but it was more America was like that.
Yeah.
So the impact of being the first did not, there was no impact. That's why it's being pulled out now.
Yeah.
That's why you hear, or you will probably start here, the first African-American, we can just say black,
yeah,
person to win a U.S. Open. That was in 1992, but nobody else ever competed.
Yeah,
that's
right.
I was the one who got that far. It's not for lack of trying. We just hadn't arrived yet.
Just hadn't reached.
Yeah, we just hadn't gotten to the party.
Spectacular. So
it's nice to feel an impact now, you know, being close to 50 years old, that people are like, wow, you were the first. People don't believe it because I look younger than 50, and they just can't imagine that, you know, a normal person walking, you know, in and out of an ice rink was the first to do anything.
But that's why, like, I really want to take the opportunity to talk to you, because I think it's important for people to hear that, yeah, you know, history is made, our history was someone else's present. Like, there's firsts, we're still here. Like, that could be, someone listening to this could be the first trillionaire, the first person to invent this new technology. Like, it's there for us to take. Just because we haven't arrived yet, it doesn't mean it may not be you or your cousin or your friend, or it's all still there for the taking for us in any area or endeavor that we choose to put ourselves into. And I think your story sums that. It's a great example of that.
It's my
pleasure and my honor. So what's happening now? So I know that you formed and I'm going to mention this, but you accepted the Lifetime Achievement Award on the behalf of Mabel Fairbanks.
Yes. In 2002, and that was, you know, that was incredible, and I felt so completely honored that she picked me, you know, on of everybody that she has touched in her life. You know, Scott Hamilton was one of her students, Ty Babylonia, you know, she set Ty and Randy up, and for me to leave that impression on a hero, it was just amazing. It was amazing. That weekend was crazy because that whole weekend I spent probably, or the week prior and then all around there, I spent with my Aunt Roberta in New York. I went to visit her and we got to catch up, and I spent a couple of days with her, went to a concert and that she was performing in. And that's to have Roberta Flack walk around a Coliseum introducing me as her star niece was amazing. And I went from there, got in a limo and went to Connecticut, where I did a show with Aretha Franklin. And neatest thing about that is when Aretha came down, when she came into the green rooms, you know, we all had our different rooms, you could hear her walk, come in the hall and go, "Where's Rory? I need to meet her first. I promise Roberta." And I was like, oh my gosh, that's Aretha Franklin. And it was just, you know, the time of my life, because she, you know, I had dinner with her after. She let me stand in and sing, because there was a point where she sang Pink or Freeway of Love with the finale, and it was too cold with the ice. So they just had a track, you know. So oddly enough, being one of the only skaters out there, we'll say being the skater of color, I knew all of her songs.
Yeah.
So I just stood there singing them all, you know. And when it came down to it, and she didn't, "Oh, Roberta's or Aretha's not coming out," and I grabbed the mic and I, you know, it's like, "Here we go." You know, I'll sing it. So that was a lot of fun. Had dinner after her afterwards. And it was probably, actually, I'll tell you, it was right before the show opened, I found out Mabel passed.
Mm.
And it was, yeah, it was the night of the show, and I found out, and it was devastating. However, the piece of music that I picked, and I was then able to perform it for Mabel.
Mm.
Because I found out that, you know, she passed, and then she asked, you know, if I would accept her before she passed, if I would accept her award. And so the next day I got back in a car and went back up to New York to accept her award. But I skated to bridge over troubled waters. And that was this, it's such an emotional song. And when I picked it, I thought of her, because she is our bridge. She was our bridge. You know, she's the one who got us there. Otherwise, that water would, you know, we'd still be trying to get over the water.
Yeah.
And I don't know if you can watch it. It's on Facebook. And I think Roy put it up on Instagram. But when you see it, like, I watched that and I can't believe I skated like that. But I really feel like as great as it felt, and I watch it and the emotion, everything, because I was just really wrapped up in making sure that I did Mabel justice, you know? And so, yeah, I got to then go up to New York. It was right after 9/11 happened. So the first thing that we did, there was some press happening, and then I got to go serve the firefighters at Ground Zero lunch. All these amazing things that I got to do because I stayed in skating.
Yeah, you kept at it. You stayed the course.
I wouldn't have got to do that. Yeah, I'm still doing it. I'm still on course because there still hasn't been enough progress made. So here we are, you and I, mm-hmm. on course,
mm-hmm.
you know, divine intervention. And there's going to be a first Black Olympic champion. They might be listening. Their mother might be listening. And she doesn't even have the baby yet. But there will be a first. And through all of, you know, I'm not going to, through all my efforts, I hope that I live to see that.
You're making me emotional now, but you still have some more firsts to go through, because you created, or you created, produced, and choreographed the first all African American ice skating production, Ebony on Ice. Correct.
Mm-hmm. Correct. And I want, you know what? It has to become worldwide. I think that Europe would. When you're saying about how can you teach your son?
Yeah.
This is what we call edutainment.
Yeah.
It's educational. You are going to learn so much in this show. I mean, the show starts in Africa. It starts off as a celebration and turns into a slave hunt.
Wow.
And the narration, how you go through, it's narrated, and it's narrated through an ancestral side. You start with the little girl who is 13 years old, and she's about to become a woman, she's be married in Africa. You're 13, it's time. It all gets interrupted, the whole celebration, and she's excited. And you hear this in a narration, it's my first celebration. And it never happens. She wakes up on the shore of Africa to the sounds of the waves and the boats and things they've never heard before. And where are we? And where's this body of water?
Mm.
You know, and then I use Amazing Grace because my son, researched it so well. It had to be the boat ride.
Yeah.
You know, so to watch the skaters are dancing on a stage of ice, because it's the first, I don't know if people know, it's in a theater. So it's got a back screen. It's a theater event. It's like I want to be on Broadway. That's my goal.
Yep.
That is my goal. And
so let's go back just a bit. So if I'm right, this started in 2002 and it's still running now.
No, we took a long hiatus. I took a long hiatus. Okay. There was things that happened with our executive producers, the third or fourth tour. And so right now we're auditioning. We're auditioning executive producers. We're looking, because, and we just need somebody like-minded. The hardest thing with producing a first is that when people see it, there's a side of people that want to take over and cut you out. And they tried to do that. On the internet now, you'll see Ebony on Ice 2. tried to take the whole idea, you know, and run with it. And it just, you know, for them, it didn't work. For me, I took a break because some of my skaters went and did that while they were in rehearsals with me. So we finished out the tour and, you know, life went on. Now is the important time to bring it back.
Mm.
With what everything is going through, the world, and I'll say going through, but the color change in the world. And I say change, but you know what? We're just a little more illuminated right now.
Mm.
You know, the spotlight is on all of us.
Yeah, most definitely.
And so, yes, and since it is, let's give them a show. Something that is going to make people understand, recognize not just the history of blacks, the history of music, the history of skating. You know, there's this show goes through genres. When we get to America, what kind of music did we have? We only had we had slave hymns.
Yeah.
You know, we practiced church outside in the fields. All that's in this show.
Oh, it sounds amazing. we need to get this, we need to get this here in the UK, take it around the Caribbean. Let me know. I'm invested.
Okay. You know, find some investors. I'm there. We are all looking because it's amazing. And you'll see on my Instagram page as we, you know, pull up different pictures of different scenes from the show. But we go from field songs to I have a poem, Maya Angelou, I Rise, is in there. That takes us in the gospel, because we rose up out of those fields and built churches, and we were able to go inside and create music. And so the music that you hear too, it's not just from that era. I got Kirk Franklin in there doing Stomp, because it's relevant now. It's relevant to hear that Amazing Grace went into kind of a hip hop craze.
Yeah.
You know, and it doesn't have to. So we go through that, take a break, we go into jazz, because that's what was created next. All the genres. And a lot of the first we talk about, you know, and when I say we talk, the show moves so fast through that it's just a wealth of knowledge and entertainment. And I know, because we have testimonials, when people came out of the show, it was just like, they couldn't believe, like, all the music that they heard in there. There's just so much different music. How did you get Mary J. Blige and the same thing, Teddy Pendergrass is in there?
Plus
dance. Well, because there was an evolution.
Ice. Yeah. Plus history.
Yeah. Plus costumes.
That's a real
and
show.
The biggest change in the show, the biggest, I say change, but improvement, is our ice will be black instead of white. And so with black ice and how I have the costumes, it literally looks like they're dancing, gliding, because the floor is black. So they look probably like they're floating an inch off the ground if you don't see the blades, because they're black too.
Wow.
And we have shoe covers, so they actually look like shoes. I mean, it's it's incredible. It's when it's done, when you see it, you just really wouldn't think that would be an ice show, because I could easily do it. Here's an interesting fact. I had some stars come do some performances the first year that we ran. So Savion Glover tapped. He set up his stage and a little square that reached out into the audience off of the ice. And the year after he did Ebony on Ice, he did his own tour. And he made it the anthology of African American music, Tap. And somebody says, doesn't that bother you? I said, no. What is that? How does that have anything to do, except he took a good idea? So I feel blessed and honored that, you know, he could take that idea and run with it. Doesn't do anything towards my show and scheme except make it more important.
And once again, that theme of putting people against each other rears its head, right?
Yes it does. Yeah. It's amazing.
So to anybody listening to this now, how can they get in contact with you? How can they find out what you're doing? Where are you? All the details, you can give them all out now.
Instagram, you know, Instagram, Facebook. We have Facebook. You can Facebook Rory Flack on everything. And then I have, what is the other one? It's Roy, correct? I think it's Roy, R-O-I, R-O-R-Y, is the big Facebook page that is the page that everything's put on.
Fantastic. So Rory Flack. R-O-Y.
Instagramming.
Instagram is definitely Rory Flack. I've seen that. I believe Facebook is Rory Flack as well. You also have your website. Do you want to say your website address?
Color of Ice Productions.
Color of Ice Productions.
Yep. Inc. Oh, wait, no. I'm sorry. I'm making it too long. It's Color of Ice Pro.
ColorofIcePro.com. Okay, we're getting the plugs in. Let's get the plugs in now, right? Not miss the plugs.
And anyone interested in seeing what it would take to do Ebony on Ice, you can DM me on Instagram.
Great stuff. One question from me. Do you coach?
Oh, yes. I do. I coach. I have been coaching now for 28 years.
Mm-hmm.
One of my past students was in the Olympics this year. And I taught him from 5 to, I want to say, 20. Yeah, until about 20, until he switched countries. So as he competed for America, I was his choreographer and spin coach, the second side of the mark coach. And then he switched countries and competes for Canada now, and he made it to the Olympics. So, and I teach from little babies to adults.
Fantastic. And one last thing, I have to ask this. So for any young Black boy or Black girl out there that's thinking about getting onto the ice and they've heard the story about the fingers getting cut off, that I heard when I was first going onto the ice, what would you have to say to them? What do you want to say to them?
The most I will say, and I'm laughing because my neighbor across the hall just said that to me. I said, your daughter needs to get on the ice. And she said, she'll cut her fingers off. And the first thing I looked at her and I said, your fingers are not supposed to be on the ice. Let's start there. The first thing that you need to do, and this is learn how to fall and get up, because that's the most that you do in the beginning. So if you know how to fall, and that's, it's like you do that off the ice, fall, get up. And to fall, I can explain it. You bend your knees and lean to one side. A lot of people fall and they go straight onto their knees and their arms stretch out forward and you do kind of a belly flop. That's when people talk about the fingers, because if there's people skating around you, they're not going to see your hands.
I don't think you realized how profound what you just said was. Learn how to fall and then get up.
You have to be comfortable at something. Make it falling in the beginning. Falling and getting up. Make that the most comfortable thing you can do. Then you can fly out there.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Save big on your Memorial Day barbecue, all in the Kroger app. Get 3-pound rolls of juicy 80% lean ground beef for $3.49 a pound with a digital coupon. Then get select varieties of flavorful Powerade, Body Armor Super Drink, or Arizona Tea for 77 cents each, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.